This is part two of the John Trudell dialogue, which occurred on September 22nd at the Barrios Unidos Land.
Extreme thing, but if everyone woke up tomorrow morning and said, I will not enable anything I know to be a lie, the energy dynamic would change immediately. The system couldn't function. I mean, it is an extreme hypothetical, right? But the reality is, I will no longer enable the lie. And I think that it's important for us to adopt that as a mindset for ourselves. You know, because, you know, and when I mean no longer enable the lie, here's a lie that we shouldn't enable, that there's something wrong with us, that we're not good enough. See, we're enabling those lies. You know, I think that on an individual basis, So to me, don't make prideful decisions. You know what I mean? Make clear and coherent decisions about whatever it is. And, you know, and it's hard to not have an emotional reaction sometimes, you know. I mean, it's really hard. So I'm not saying don't have an emotional reaction. I'm just saying don't make an emotional decision. Sometimes maybe we got to have the reaction and get it out of our system so we can make a clear decision. But too many times, and for the movements, see, that we were all a part of, they all operate on emotional decisions. You know, so the beast says over here, well, I'm going to invade Syria. So everybody gets an emotional reaction. And then over here, well, here's Fukushima. Everybody, right? And all these emotional decisions, see, and there's no focused energy. The energy is something about an internal combustion engine. You know, the chaos, when it makes chaos, makes the engine run. All right? Well, the chaos of our intelligence is what makes this other engine run.
I got a question because you're so right. A lot of the kids that were part of Think Outside the Bomb went and trained in a place that we have for children. It's called the Tallulah Learning and Healing Center for Children. And young kids come there from, you know, all walks of life and all cultures. And one of the things is that some of the young people came back and because this is what we talked about, right? What we did was show the masses of the young people and the energy that the young people had and what they were capable of doing. On the other hand, the system itself set back. And I would use the things you're saying is mine the energy. So the energy that the young people took there, with all good intentions, at the end of that, were totally exhausted and confused about the next steps. Not to say that some people weren't and didn't know where they were going, but the majority of them didn't know.
Yeah.
And which is really sad, right? And so all of this thing about passing it on to the young people, give it to the young people. And I always say, why are you going to give it to the young people? They don't deserve it. You know, have you clarified what it is that you're talking about? What have we become clear and clean with all the things that have happened in the movement that we can then say, we don't want you to take this junk, but now take who you are and move with what you know. So I think that in terms of the other example I would use is the clear example of what happened with the immigrant movement in this country. When we had thousands upon thousands of people marching around the country, right? And once again, this country sat back and they allowed it to happen. Watching the amount of energy that could be put forth in terms of these mass movements, and then sitting back and letting people again wear themselves out because of how do we move in that direction to find a solution that they already have.
Yeah.
Comes to a point in reality for me, as you're talking, is that we have to find that source of energy. And how we learn to understand it. Because more than utilizing it, right, is to understand it. Because as we sit here, right, the energy that we all feel and the connectedness that we all feel is the things which lack, right, with a lot of our young people, because most of our young people are just gung-ho to do whatever it has to be done in the spirit of the revolution. But nobody's sitting back and thinking as they
It's what we need to encourage. That's what I'm saying. It's, you got, you know, it's like as an example about what we have to understand between. Because I look at Alcatraz. When I look at the things that I was involved in, they can't do that today. That can't be done today, you know. And it's like as an example. This Occupy Wall Street. Yeah, it was a trap. You know, they can identify everybody that has a cell phone that was at Occupy Wall Street, and their cell phone doesn't even have to be on. They can identify everybody that was at any Occupy Wall Street if they had a cell phone. Now, what does that mean? That means, well, they got the phone number. That means, well, they know who you call up, all right? And then they know who they call up, right? It was something sinister lurking way back here in the shadows, all right? Seriously. Because they're not identifying people just for the fun of it. They're the reason they're doing this, that we will truly understand better. But everybody was emotional decisions. But everybody emotionally got caught up and ran out and jumped into what was basically a middle-class white man's deal, all right? But in reality, all right? And they're using Idle No More for the same thing. To identify people, all right, and but that whole thing was bait. And I think that the Occupy Wall Street, I think that the moneyed people, they organized it, all right. So for purposes and reasons of identification, all right, and because they gave them everything, they can identify down, right. I mean, if they have the phone number and they have the name, then they got your picture. Because you have a license or you have some kind of ID somewhere, then they know who you are, they know where your money, they know everything. All right? And I think that and they followed the money that was contributed to it. See, so when we're talking to young people now or anybody, I'm not saying not to protest. I'm not going to say, right, you know, because I understand some body stuff has to be involved in it, but think it out. You know, have a clear strategic objective. Because what I was saying, like in terms of non-cooperation, but nobody wanted to hear this from me about that, because everybody was all gung-ho on Wall Street or Occupy. Nobody really wanted to hear it. But if all of the time, because what did the Occupy Wall Street achieve? You know, I mean, other than somebody released some steam, emotional steam, but what did it achieve?
The 1% control of the country.
Yeah, they help. That's right. And now they know who the main ones are that resist it too. I mean, when you look at, but looking in terms of energy, if all of the time and money and effort that had been put in to organizing Occupy Wall Street, if all of the energy, if all of that counted up as energy, was put into organizing people not to spend any money on the same day. All right, trying to organize 30% of the population not to spend any money on the same day. All right, then there would have been an objective. All right, that would have made a statement that they could not ignore, and it would have made a statement without handing everybody's identities over to them.
You know, we have these kind of discussions with the youth, and even the youth come up and they talk about this picture.
Yeah.
You know, but this is the reality. This is the reality of what society is doing and can do. Mm-hmm. You know, but many adults don't believe that, or we deny it. We deny that this system has evolved to this level. that their technology, and it's not just about sending somebody to the moon. It took a lot of technology to do that. And in the process, they developed other things and other connections that they even sold back as commercial products. You know, New York set up the cameras, right? They set up the cameras where now they can watch every street and they can do facial profiling and all this. They had a company that when they hear a gunshot go off, you know, they went in partnership, this company went in partnership with New York to develop this system. You know, so, you know, when we look at that and how they evolved, we have to look also how we evolved. And what denied us from our own evolvement, and also how we denied ourselves, and how we deny ourselves today. You know, this reality, you know, how do we participate in it? And I go back to, you know, we talk about energy. You know, we look at the children. How do we interfere with their development? Really young. They're coming up. What do we teach them? What do we tell them? What do we feed them? Not only the food, but the thoughts and ideas. Their environment that we create. You know, the consumerism that we hear, it has evolved. We live in a consumer society. Youth are worth $10-15 billion before they hit 13. Because they have the power to influence their parents to buy. As parents, you know, if we really look at the history of this country, you know, are we in denial with the reality? Because if we are, we can't come up with a solution. The way that society is now, and we look at the unemployment, like look at Watsonville, 25-30% unemployment. Who's unemployed? What do they look like?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And where did those jobs go?
Yeah. And where did jobs go?
Where? Did they
you know,
go
so this out? This is a reality. In the movement, you know, we were young. You know, we looked at all kinds of ideas, whether it was from China, whether it was Marx, whether it was Engels, whether it was Chairman Mao, whether it was Malcolm X, whoever. Because we were a people that were trying to survive and trying to understand what our reality was. And at the same time as we were coming up with our solutions, right? Community, we have community organizations. You know, we have people that work. That money came into organizations, and organizations developed breakfast programs, developed schools, developed free medical clinics that came out in San Francisco out of San Francisco General Hospital. You know, the workers, our families were there. And then doctors and everybody got together. We had to work together. But also we had these things like the ego, or not knowing how to develop relations. So maybe we weren't together as we should be. But in San Francisco, in Chinatown, you had Iwakuni. In Japantown, you had J-Town Collective. In Petrero Hill, you had the Young Patriots, who were white. You had, in the Mission, you had La Raza organizations. You know, in Fillmore, you had the Panthers. And everybody was doing something. You had a Native American movement. You had Valencia. You had all these things, and people were trying to do what? Express our humanness.
Yeah.
Survive. And part of what interfered with that movement was this system that didn't want this to happen. They mm-hmm. want us to get together and talk, and they definitely don't want us to get together and act. So they interfered with it. Took leaders, took them out, threw them to jail. But also, we didn't take ownership of the things we were doing to ourselves. Drugs, they were there. Alcohol was there. You know, egos were there. You know, personal interest was there. You know, we also, as people I think today that have come from that, you know, even today, I look at, you know, in unions, okay? We had union elections recently for business agents. And even within there, they're fighting because they have different opinions of how to do things. But what is the commonality they have? They're supposed to be there working for workers' rights, trying to develop a better, you know, life for their families. Well, we have gangs. We have North and South. But we got a lot in common, right? And even in the same family, you know, we're brothers and sisters, but you're a North and I'm a South. You know, so what is the ownership of saying, taking ownership and saying, man, I'm doing something wrong. You know, I'm doing something wrong. When I come home, put down, you know, we're going to drink. If the kids come, let them drink because at least they're home. What do we do? And in this circle, we have to ask ourselves too, what do we do in our habits to take that energy? Because we talked about energy way back, right? And either you're dispersing it, right? Because we're using it. How are you using it? Efficiently? We think about our cars and we say, hey man, I want my car to be efficient. How can I, you know, balance my tires, my engine, you know, air cleaners and all that. But what about us in our life? We use a lot of energy and time in the wrong direction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it brought us here today. This is how we, why we are who we are today. We're part of that. I'm part of that. You know, I came out of that. I'm here today and I'm still involved in the movement. Looking at saying, hey, how do we promote life? How do we become more efficient? Mm-hmm. How do we push aside the BS and not participate in it?
Yeah.
And to me, that's the goal, not to participate in it. Not to get caught up in being defined. You know? I mean, I didn't think anything was wrong with me growing up. I heard that, you know, if you're a person of color, then you're nothing. Tracking system? I didn't develop the tracking system. I was part of it. You know, but I didn't say I wanted to be in it.
That's right.
Well, John, we are, as humans, able to think if we let ourselves. How would you say that we as humans would need to stand up to the industrial military complex on a human level? I mean, it's in our hearts, so that it just doesn't keep continuing. How does that?
Well, first,
transfer.
I think we should, whatever we're going to participate, whatever we're going to do, we should do it on the human being level.
Okay.
The human being, because if we're going to do it on the human level, we're ignoring the energy part of us, the being part.
Okay.
So I think human beings should be. That's who we are, right? And no matter what we do, military, industrial, whatever we do as human beings, we need to do it with clear, coherent thinking. See, that's what it needs. That's the core of what is needed, is for us to think with clarity and coherency. Because that is a way of seeing. See, we have an ability to see, all right, beyond our eyes. And with clarity, it's almost like with seeing and feeling. Clear, coherent use of our intelligence is a way of seeing, a way of feeling. All right, and I think that's necessary to anything that we do. All right, if we're going to stand up to the military-industrial complex, number one, we need to take responsibility for our intelligence and use it clearly and coherently. We need to take responsibility for our intelligence and use it clearly and coherently before we do anything. Otherwise, none of the rest of it is just going through motions. To take, you know, and I want, because we've been imprinted with this abstraction of freedom, you know, and because I mean, it's a nice rah-rah, the word freedom, but it's a lie. All right? It's a trick and it's a lie. Freedom. Look at the word. Dumb. It ends in dumb. All right? Free and dumb. Free and dumb. Free, dumb. All right? But let's look at the dumb. D-O-M. It's taken from the Latin for dominion and domination. So they take free and then they add domination to the end of it. All right? That's the dominated free. So what's that mean? Now, and then logical, practical reality. If someone mentioned about not being in denial and self-denial, then let's cut right to the chase. We're born into a reality where you have to pay to be born, you have to pay to die, and you got to have money to live. Now, where is the free? I mean, it's basic, simple reality. Where is the free? All right? I mean, simple reality. Now let's go with the other way. I understand the reality of being free. Being free. All right? Now that makes sense to me. All right? But for human beings to be free, they need to take responsibility. Responsibility is an interesting word. It's two words, response and ability. Response and ability. All right? And responsibility. Then you put them together. All right? And that's what... So, as a human being, all right, we need to take responsibility. And how do we take responsibility? By respecting and using our intelligence as clearly and coherently as we can. Think things out. Don't make emotional decisions. I'm telling you, because we've been so... Because the whole deal about being imprinted to have all these self-doubts and, I mean, those ones that maybe everybody doesn't get to see, but those, am I good enough? All those hidden, I'm good enough. With all that imprinted in there, right, then that means, with all that imprinting in us, all right, we have a responsibility to deal with that. But the responsibility, as two words, the responsibility is to use our intelligence clearly and coherently and look at that is not the truth, that there's something wrong with us. See, our responsibility in using our intelligence and with clarity and coherency. And I think that when we do that, what we will see, because it is part of an evolutionary, there is only an evolutionary solution. There is no revolutionary solution. But if we take responsibility and it's about a decision we make, and it really is, to use our intelligence with clarity and coherency, then we will generate clear and coherent energy. And just how we affect people with the poor me energies, the beating ourselves up energies, we would affect with clear and coherent energy. That's a responsibility. All right? And because there is no instant solution, people get caught up in this the romanticism of revolution, but I'm going to tell you, revolution means you go back to where you came from. All right? That's all revolution means. You go back to where you started from. So if you started out oppressed, you're going to end up back with oppressed. That's revolution. That's just the reality of it. That's what I mean. See, but evolution is another context. Now, if people understood to use revolution, all right, as a point to get somewhere in an evolutionary context, that may be different. But people look at revolution as solving the problem. And it doesn't solve the problem. Yeah. Right? And no revolutionary, I mean, there's romanticisms about certain revolutions and stuff, but in the end, no revolution will ever succeed, because every revolution, no matter who wins it, they end up dealing with the industrial ruling class. See? So yeah. There's an industrial ruling class on this planet. That's who the real threat is against us, right? And capitalists and Catholics and Jews or Muslims or whatever, all of that, communists, all that. They're just smokescreen stuff. Those, all right? Because that industrial ruling class controls all of that. So if we're going to stand up for anything, then let's stand up for ourselves, all right? And what I mean by stand up for ourselves. And take responsibility to use our intelligence as clearly and coherently as we possibly can, as often as we can, you know. And along the way we do that, because what I find interesting about it is that it becomes easier to do once we start to do it. You know, it's a decision we make. You know, everybody here does something. They have a job, or there's something they like to do, everybody here has something that they do. And whatever that something that they do is, somewhere they made a decision they were going to learn how to do it. And then they focused the energy of their intelligence on learning how to do it. All right? See, so it's something we do all the time. But this time, it's invisible. It's a different kind of it's a magic. It's not a material magic that you see instantly. It's more of a different kind of evolutionary magic. Make the decision, I'm going to use my intelligence as clearly and coherently as I can. And then do what is necessary to do that, and then this is what starts to open up abilities to see in a whole new dimension. Because the real deal is, to me, is we need, in my own personal opinion, all right, is that we need to start thinking. We need to think our way out of this. All right, all the rest of it is secondary. We need to think our way out of this. And when we do it on an individual basis, individually, all right, we will see change in our life individually. It's because it'll be about how we perceive. But see, everybody wants to skip that step. See, but you can't skip it, because we've all been infected with the disease. So now we have to become our own antibiotic. Because and I call it an infection. It's like there's this disease that affects the perception of whoever has the disease. It affects the self-perception, which then affects the perception of reality. All right, and we've all been affected by it. But the gift, if we're going to look in spiritual context, the gift of intelligence that we were given as human beings, see, the gift of intelligence is the one thing that can undo that. It's a decision we make. All right? The decision, clarity and coherency. I'm going to think more and believe less, and I'm not going to judge at all. I'm going to recognize and not judge. You know, and there are fine lines, you know, and people are going to say, you know, but we'll know the difference. We'll know, because when you recognize, you're seeing it for what it is. When you judge, then you're feeling some kind of moral superiority. Basically, that's the best I can break it down to. All right? And sometimes we're going to look and we're going to recognize the thing for what it is, and people are going to try to play word games. No, you're judging. But no, that's not necessarily true. See, that's what I mean. So this way we stay authentic to ourselves.
Uh-huh, authentic.
We should never lie to ourselves. We should never, because we need to, it's up to us to authenticate. All right, that word, right? It's up to us to do it for ourselves. Yeah, authenticate ourselves. It's up to us to do that, right? And that's because that's part of our gift, the gift of life. It's up to us to do that, and we do that by seeing who we are and understanding who we are and then how we do our act. Yeah, that's right.
Recognize we have the gift to think clearly.
And we all have that gift. All right? And the deal is, because once we start to do that, then there's going to be people that don't get it and don't understand. But the thing is, fine, they don't understand, but I'm not going to argue. You know, I mean, if somebody disagrees with me and they don't want to go with me, well, I'm not asking them to go anyway. But if somebody disagrees with me, right, then I got no quarrel with that. All right, no, fine. If you don't like it and don't get it, fine. All right, and that to me, because what I found is that it's almost like we talk about what we all have in common and common grounds, how we go against ourselves and all. I mean, because that happens. I've seen it happen so many times. But the thing that I think that's inherent in all of us, all right, is a thing called common sense. All right, but nobody's really making sense right now. Because everybody's fear and reactionary motivated for whatever their cause is. I mean, really. So, I mean, to a large degree. All right? And what we got to do to these young people, to anybody else, is we got to be as clear and coherent as we can and make sense.
Yeah.
Make sense, right? And as what I was saying, don't tell them marijuana is a drug, because that doesn't make sense. You know, because they know, and they don't trust us. And I don't blame them for not trusting us. I mean, you know, if you really get down to it, I don't mean on an individual, but just kind of as a generational thing. Because... because we went out and gave it the best shot that we could based upon our abilities to perceive reality. All right? And obviously, it had some pluses for it, but it really wasn't, you know, it really didn't solve the problem. Because when I was growing up, where I grew up on the reservation, well, the alcohol and unemployment. See, but now it's meth and crack, right? You know what I mean? And it's much more destructive than it ever was. For my generation, it's a much more brutal reality now, you know. And so we did all of the good stuff that we could. We did the best that we could. But the deal is, there's an even more brutal reality than what I see. The reality coming for our young ones, the descendants, right, is the reality. I see brutality in that reality. That's going to be equivalent to the brutality in our great grandparents' reality, as Indians. Mm-hmm. All right. I mean, I'll say it like that. I mean, for us. See, but I don't mean this. But what I see for the future, white kids are Indians. Everybody's it's a class Indian now, right? And but that kind of a thing. So this is why I think it's important for us. I know it's not fast enough for anybody's clock, but the deal is we need to think. We need to think our way through it. Because an example of that, see, the efforts like this, what you're doing here, this is a great thing. Even if I don't know what the numbers are participating in, see, but it's here, it makes sense, and it will, think in terms of evolution, right? It will draw more because the energy says that it will, all right? Because there are people that are out there. And to me, it's kind of like, well, we do what we can, make as much sense as we can, right? Because that's what I see as our common denominator. To make as much sense as we can.
Yeah, let me share with you. We have a center that we run, and the children come there. They start out probably when they're 5 years old, and they've been coming for years now. And most of our work is based on energy. And we teach the kids, we don't impose things on them, but we try to take who they are and build from the strength of where they're coming from, as we say, as human beings, right? So that allows them to feel more freely about who they are and be more cooperative in the area, in the camp. So I see what you're saying, and I think it's very important and kind of made it more crystallized, the process that we're doing back home, more important. Because many of these children are now adults. They're not children anymore. But they started out when they were 5 years old and 6 years old in the process. So and I think one of the most important things is what you're saying is think. Reacting out of emotion because you react is something that you're taught. And I think it's really important to recognize that because, you know, we talk about different levels of emotion and what emotions really mean to us. So I think that in that process is what allows the kids to go deeper, right, in terms of feeling who they are. And as we say, you know, it is to create, you know, ourselves as and acknowledge ourselves as human beings. Because we say we will give you the greatest honor, right? We will treat you as a human being. And so that when they come there, that is all that is required of them. Nothing else is, you know, they learn. And I think it's so important that I'm here at this discussion with you today. And as I was telling Mary Lou and them, in our beliefs, nothing is a coincidence. Nothing is for a reason. And so I just wanted to thank you for having the opportunity of being here today.
Well, no, I appreciate that, and I do want people to understand, I'm not trying to disrespect whatever our efforts were in the past,
right?
Because we did what we did from what we knew, but we're at the age now where we really have to look at it, you know, look back and say, hold it, this didn't really, see, I don't see enough of that going on, because some of the partners I ran with, you know, they didn't learn shit. You know what I mean? Still trying to pretend it was 1973. You know, and hold it. But I'm sorry, it ain't. You know, I mean, and
not only that, we have an obligation to teach the youth to not make the mistakes we made.
But we have to tell them what the mistakes were in a way that makes sense.
We've got to admit mistakes. That's where we often
One of the things, Teresa. I, you know, listen to her stories a lot, and so I always want to add something she may not have thought of, including, I think maybe when I was in the bathroom, were you talking about the Occupy kids being at the camp?
I did mention
that. Yeah, so, I mean, 2.5 years ago, maybe, the Occupy kids came to do this training camp to get ready to go to New York. But so they, you know, they rented the camp, and Starhawk did some permaculture with them, and, you know, there were some interesting things going on. But the most interesting point on this evolutionary process that you're discussing, and how would you get people to not go to the event? I mean, what if they threw an event and nobody came? You know, I've been thinking about this since the Battle of Seattle. And then I was thinking about it with the, was it the Republican convention in Minnesota or something? They spent, you know, zillions of dollars on police fusion technology, and everybody, you know, all the young people went up there so we can get into a big fight. And, I mean, I understand that because I grew up in the Bay Area in the 1960s, and thank God for Alcatraz, by the way. Because it really did make a difference in our high school, at least to raise our consciousness. But And we started dressing in, you know, Indian headbands and growing our hair long, wearing flak jackets and combat boots and trying to be in solidarity with you guys while you were on the island at Woodside High School. But just so you know, we were there with us. But what was interesting about the Occupy thing is some of the young people that came to the camp and to this land-based outfit, after this whole thing was over and they're all exhausted, some of them came back because they needed to get back to a place to relax again, try to get that, you know, maybe it is the green, you know, and the air and the water and all that. It is. And come back, and really what this one guy wanted to do, they call him Bluebird because he used to sit the tree at Berkeley before they arrested him for trying to stop him from cutting the tree down. All he wanted to do was get back and work with the plants, and he didn't want to kill any bugs. He just wanted to move the bugs from that plant. And he relocated the bugs. He didn't kill them. But that, you know, so it's guys like that who one or two, three, four at a time. Some of them stayed afterwards for a year and embedded in the community. God forbid somebody thought of that. They go do a protest at Los Alamos and everybody left except for three or four of them that said, well, you know what, let's stay in Chimayo. You know, let's stay in Española and let's work with the people in the community, because nobody ever talked to the Chicano rank and file in the community about what the hell's going on at Los Alamos. Or something like that, right? So, I mean, it is that slow, God forbid, that slow evolutionary thing has just about done me in a few times. I get so impatient that it's so slow and I'm emotionally reactive and God damn it, you know, but you got to trench it out day after day.
Yeah, I mean, it's evolution, you know, and I do, and I think right now, just with the way everything is going, I think, I'll call this a camp, or just for lack of better terminology,
right.
But I think camps like this are some of the most sensible things that are being done. They're not getting all the glory and all the stuff, see, but I'm telling you, in the long run, all right, because they're land-based and people are, and people involved in these things, and camps like this are keeping a connection to the land, and I think keeping a connection to who they really are themselves, you know, and because I think in a whole lot of ways we all have the self-doubts and all that stuff that was put in us and stuff like that. But I think that people that are working in these kinds have this communication with reality, have a better opportunity to sort out what needs to be sorted out, because this is natural to who we really are, you know.